From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, is there a media cover-up of UFOs with our guest, ABC News electronics technician Keith Morgan. He chimes in along with Richard C. Hoagland, who will join us for that first hour with Keith. More on that a little bit later on. Well, a story we followed all night long, what was proclaimed across America as a miracle in West Virginia with the announcement of 12 trapped miners found alive, turned out to be shock and disgust with new information indicating that the 12 miners had actually died with just one man surviving the 41-year-ordeal. I will not go into all the ramifications of this story. We talked a lot about it last night, but I did tell you this would be the major story of the day today. And that, along with the Israeli Prime Minister illness, and we'll talk about that in a second, turned out to be the major story here. It's just an awful situation, and our hearts go out to all the family members of these miners that passed on. Just very, very sad story indeed. One of the youngest miners, though, the sole survivor of the mining disaster, was a quite religious man, 27-year-old Randall McCloy. He was the lone survivor. He remains in critical condition in the hospital, able, though, to squeeze his wife's hand from his bed at the West Virginia University Ruby Memorial Hospital. Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon suffered a massive life-threatening stroke and underwent lengthy surgery to drain blood from his brain after falling ill at his ranch. Now, the powers have been transferred to his deputy, Ehud Olmert. Now, as far as Sharon's condition is concerned, doctors at this moment are still operating on him. He is still hemorrhaging. They cannot stop the bleeding. He is 77 years old. He weighs 260 pounds. Some of that obviously may have contributed to this. Doctors placed him on a respirator and were trying to save his life only hours before the hard-charging Israeli leader had been scheduled to undergo a procedure to seal a hole in his heart. You remember that story we talked about last week that contributed to a mild stroke on December 18th. Israeli radio has quoted an unidentified Israeli health official as saying that the prospects of a full recovery very slim. He is actually now in grave condition. In a moment, we will have a guest, prophecy expert John Hoag, with us to talk about the ramifications of this. And some of the things John will talk with us about are indeed very startling. A homicide bomber killed 34 mourners and wounded dozens of people at a funeral in Iraq for a neighbor of a Shiite politician. One of several attacks across Iraq that killed a total of 53 people, making it the deadliest day since the December 15th elections. The top Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee has told President Bush that the White House broke the law by withholding information from a full congressional oversight committee about a new domestic surveillance program. In a letter to the president, Representative Jane Harman, a Democrat of California, said the National Security Act requires the heads of the various intelligence agencies to keep the entire House and Senate intelligence committees fully and currently informed of the intelligence activities of the United States. Only in the case of a highly classified covert action can the president choose to inform a very small group of Congress members about his decision. That action is defined in the law as an operation of influence, political, economic, or military conditions of another country. The NSA program does not qualify as a covert action, according to Harman. A South Korean man was in critical condition after setting himself on fire in a courtroom where he was sentenced to a $300 fine for disturbing the peace. The district court in Seoul, South Korea, had just upheld a fine that he received in 2004 for causing a disturbance at a mobile phone sales outlet where he was demanding a new phone. The man walked out of the courtroom after the sentence, doused himself with heating oil, came back to the courtroom, set himself on fire. Well, I don't know about you, but when you wait in line at some of these phone stores, it does get to be a little eerie, doesn't it? But setting yourself on fire, that's a little too much. An extraordinary burst of global warming that occurred around 55 million years ago dramatically reversed Earth's pattern of ocean currents, a finding that strengthens modern-day concern about climate change. And they just simply don't know what happened. The suspected reason, of course, after all this happened, was the inrush of fresh water into the northern Atlantic caused by melting glaciers in Greenland. Why did they melt? They don't know. 55 million years ago. They didn't have cars then. Puppies are popping up everywhere amid the rubble left by Hurricane Katrina. And animal welfare workers on the northern Gulf Coast fear that it's only the start of a big boom in dog births there. Officials say that 6,000 pets were saved after Katrina came ashore on August 29th, and many of them were relocated to homes elsewhere in the country. An unknown number sadly drowned in the floodwaters or died later of injuries. But thousands of animals remain running loose in neighborhoods where fences have been flattened and many owners are gone. And apparently puppies are popping up everywhere. In Holland, the registry office there has been flooded with requests for couples who want to get married on June 6 of this year, 2006. They believe it is because of the reference in Revelation to 666 as the number of the beast. Now, I don't know why people would want to get married on that day. So far, 17 couples there have applied to marry in a Dutch city on June 6. Normally, there are only one or two weddings in that city, so they're way ahead of schedule. On Sunday, I had a program on predictions. I think I'll make it an annual event where we had a number of psychics on to talk about what they see for the coming year. Sean David Morton thought that his favorite team, USC, would defeat Texas for the championship. This is what he said that day. Can I make a prediction for you, Sean?
Okay, please.
USC over Texas, huh? I think USC is going to pull it off.
Okay. Well, I was telling you last July that we'd go undefeated again and we'd be playing in the national championship, although I think I said it was going to either be Texas or Ohio State.
But I got to tell you, Texas is strong, very, very strong.
I'm sorry, we're going to crush them. We're going to crush them. It's USC just doesn't play you. We destroy your football program. It'll be 55-21, because we'll put our third and fourth string in the fourth quarter. How's that sound?
Well, actually, Texas won 41-38. Congratulations to Texas. Sean was wrong. I was wrong, but he's the psychic. I'm not. In a moment, we'll be talking with John Hogue about the situation in Israel and just what it means for the world. In a moment, on Coast to Coast AM. John Hogue writes on the subjects of the occult, parapsychology, mysticism, and prophecy. He is considered a world authority in Nostradamus and is the best-selling author of numerous books, including Nostradamus, The Complete Prophecies, and Nostradamus, The New Millennium, The Millennium Book of Prophecy, The Last Pope and Messiahs, The Visions and Prophecies for the Second Coming. His work has brought him international acclaim, and he's been published in 18 languages, sold more than 1 million copies worldwide. In addition, he's appeared on more than 700 radio and television shows on three continents. Now, this situation, of course, very grave situation with Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon. John Hogue, let's talk a little bit about prophecy and this situation. Quite frankly, I do not believe, I'm not a doctor, but just by what I hear, I don't think he's going to pull out of this. Do you?
No. And certainly he's not going to become Prime Minister again. His legacy as Prime Minister is finished, whether he survives this or not. The current update that I heard on Fox Channel just a moment ago or two was that he is, they had finished the operation and actually gone back because they found there was even more bleeding. So it's looking very dire, and they're saying he's now in critical condition.
Well, and also one doctor said grave. So to me, that means that perhaps the death could be imminent.
Yes. And it's a strange thing for me to see all this because 10 years ago, in the mid-90s, I came in contact with people who introduced me to prophecies and from that lead all the way to Jerusalem, to the Kabbalists who are there. It's a form of mystic practice of Judaism. And I was informed 10 years ago that the year 2006 would be a crisis year for Israeli people, for Israeli politics, and the potential was for the next great Middle Eastern-wide war with Israel fighting many enemies could take place in the year 2006. Now, what is interesting also about 2006 is that it is a confluence of a number of prophetic pointers in predictive astrology as well as in other sources. You even have the very interesting futurological study of William Strauss and Neil Howe in their book, The Fourth Turning, which looks at four generational seasons that create what's basically a historical cycle that repeats itself like seasons. And they're 20-year periods. And they were saying as far back when they published the book in 1997 that they figured that the crisis period would begin, the next turning, the fourth turning into a new era. After crisis, then there's success. You know, the crisis galvanizes people to change and make things better. And but it's a 20-year period of crisis that's supposed to begin right now with this new year. And boy, has this year already taken off.
I was going to say, John, I mean, we're just a few days into it, and look what's been going on. Oh, my God.
And, you know, when you look at the potentials of three Watergate-size scandals for the president that are not just one but three, or the fact that you had the dramatic move of Ariel Sharon to try to create the Kadima Party, a middle party that would pull the people on either side who are just tired of the deadlock, the gridlock that's happened in Israeli politics over the Palestinian peace initiatives. The fact that the election looked like he was going to win a landslide in March when the scheduled elections take place. And now that when one thinks about it, such a giant man in Israeli politics, if he is not there to use his force of personality and charisma to make this thing happen, a lot of people are feeling it will put the peace process on hold, that the Israeli people don't know if Ehud Olmert will be able to, who's also sympathetic with Sharon's policies, the former mayor of Jerusalem is going to try to sustain this policy and make Kadima happen. But whether he has the charisma to bring people over, hopefully he does. But it's a very trying time. So that's the other issue. The third issue, the third marker is astrological. And it deals with in astrology, the transit of Saturn into Leo. It happens for about 2 years. Have you ever noticed that back in July things started to get smoldering and building up to something towards the end of July? Mm-hmm. As we were heading, you know, Iraq started to go south, things started to get strange with the questioning of whether the administration could keep its policies going, domestic and foreign. This is all a sign of the opening degrees of Saturn's transit into Leo. Now it's coming into its main magnification in this year, and it is also being joined by Mars. Now, what is important about that is we shift to another marker, and that's the man who lived over four centuries ago, Michel de Nostradamus, who wrote prophecies about this time when Saturn and Mars are equally fiery. And this is as I draw up the prophecy here, this is a very key link to dating what is coming. They basically, the prophecy is quatrain 64 of century 4. It reads, "In the year when Saturn and Mars are equally fiery, the air is very dry. A long comet," which is his description for missiles, "from hidden fires, a great place burns with heat. Perhaps it's an installation underground, perhaps in Iran. Little rain, hot winds, wars, and raids." Now, the times that Saturn and Mars are equally fiery have also coincided with either a sudden dramatic flame-up of wars that are ongoing, or it's the start of new wars. Saturn and Mars were in fire signs when Hitler conquered Warsaw. Saturn and Mars were in fire signs during the Tet Offensive in Vietnam. They were in fire signs when the Great Indian Partition took place and millions of people were displaced when Pakistan was created. So my point being that these are very important windows in time, and Nostradamus was very sensitive to look at the repetition of windows in time in his prophecies. Now, what is key about what we have coming now is that Saturn and Mars are often in different signs equally fiery, but in this year, they're both in Leo in June of this year.
And John, and what are the odds? What are the odds of two adversaries, Yasser Arafat, Ariel Sharon, all dying within a relatively short time of each other?
Well, it's also the fact that they're also the same generation. So in the odds are not so big for that, because they're all around the same age. They've all had tough, stressful lives, and they're all giving out. I mean, they're all in their late 70s. So I'm not so surprised by that, but I am concerned when I see certain aspects in the end of March, which happened to coincide with the election in Israel, and then I see these major magnifications of things in June that are windows for war, and then another one again in December of the end of this year into January. When I see these happening, and when I see also prophecies related to a war in Mesopotamia, because of a fast company of people suddenly invading, who are called the Crusader Army, come into Mesopotamia. When you know that no Crusader Army ever marched and set foot in Mesopotamia, and yet here we have a predominantly Christian army, our army, in occupying what is modern-day Iraq. That's what Mesopotamia is. And the fact that that is overthrown, and also Saddam Hussein, there's prophecies looking about his overthrow by people who are black in aspect, people, the black angry man or the black robed this or that, and it sounds like some extremist Ayatollah from the Shia sect. I've been saying in my book since 1986 that I've been trying to be a detective to follow the process of a mystery in the future that keys on the destabilization of the Middle East via a black-robed, black, angry, turbaned person or persons. Now, in those days, I thought it might have been Khomeini who wanted to spread his Islamic fundamentalist religion across the Middle East and radicalism. He died. That didn't happen. But sometimes when you look at a prophecy potential and it doesn't happen immediately, sometimes you're on the right track, but time takes its own course. And here we have again, with us occupying on the ground Iraq, we are just moments away, weeks away from finding out that the most radical parties of Shia Iraq have won the government and allied with the Kurds, are very seriously considering a breakaway from Iraq.
John, when Hurricane Katrina hit us in the end of August, a lot of the radical Islamic fundamentalists believe that it was a gift from God to get us. What are the possibilities now, because Sharon is despised by many of them, that they too will call this a gift of God? Does this kind of boost or give their cause a push?
Well, it's a funny thing about that. I mean, it doesn't mean that's what it is. For instance, it's like the man who points up in the air when he makes a touchdown, or it's like the I imagine there's a lot of people who are extreme on the Judeo-Christian side who are probably looking at the earthquake that took place in Pakistan a few months ago and thinking that must have been a sign of God to bury Osama bin Laden in one of his caves. I see those things as projections of extremists who are misinterpreting their signs and their religious beliefs. But what is interesting, though, looking just at the signs, is that in astrology, and also you had Louis Turi just recently on.
Yes.
And he was using the old medieval system of the dragon's head, dragon's tail, which is the north and south nodes playing a more dominant role in older time astrology. He also came to the same conclusion that Jewish scholars of prophecy 10 years ago said, that Nostradamus said perhaps 450 years ago. And what seems to be happening in these astrology readings is that June is a time when a great war in the Middle East will happen. Now, does that mean that the black and angry Ayatollahs are going to break up Iraq in a civil war? Or does it mean a civil war erupts because of an airstrike that has taken place either by the Israelis or the Americans against Iran?
When we come back, John, let's talk about end time prophecy and see if this situation with Sharon has anything to do with that. We'll also take some phone calls for our special guest, prophecy expert, John Hoag. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Well, Richard C. Hoagland, our science advisor, enterprisemission.com, joins us for an hour next hour as he helps introduce an old friend of his, Keith Morgan, an electronics technician with ABC News. We're going to be talking about some UFO cover-ups and also some incredible stories in science that will just boggle your mind. Just a few days left, and we are done with our effort to get a number of children sponsored for Children International for at least this time period. And we're very close to reaching this goal. I would like to do this as soon as we're almost done, as a matter of fact, ahead of schedule. But if you can afford $18 a month, 60 cents a day, to provide a needy child with food, clothing, health care, education, just go to the coasttocoastam.com website. On the left-hand side, you'll see a yellow flashing banner. You just click that, and that'll take you straight to Children International. You can sponsor a child that way. I think we just have a couple dozen left, and that is it. You can also call, if you don't have a computer, this toll-free number. Here it is. Get ready to write it down. 1-800-869-9863. That's 1-800-869-9863 or online, coasttocoastam.com. And welcome to Coast, I'm George Norrie with our guest prophecy expert, John Hoag. His website, hoagprophecy.com. I shall spell that for you, H-O-G-U-E prophecy.com. We'll take your calls this half hour with John as well. John, does this tie in, this illness with Sharon, does it tie in at all to end times prophecy that is in the book of Revelation?
Well, it ties into a lot of talk that's going on in Jewish mystic circles that according to the Old Testament, or the Testament, as they would say, and the Torah, that we're in the era of the Jewish Messiah. There is more and more, between now and the 2060s, is the window. It starts with this year, and it's like any time from this year on to the 2060s, is when their version of Book of Revelation, which is the Book of Daniel, and Ezekiel and other things will, other books will be fulfilled. So it could be, I imagine there are some who are thinking that because Sharon had given the lands of the Gaza Strip back to the Palestinians, I'm sure as we were talking earlier about people who think divine retribution hits this way or that way, mm-hmm. if there were those extremists on that point of view, they might believe, and I'm sure they're saying it now in Israel, some people, that because Sharon did that, God's punishing him. Whether that's true or not, or whether God gave you the touchdown and you wave your finger, or God buried Bin Laden in a cave somewhere with the earthquake that happened, it's again, could be true, but it's more likely a projection of wish fulfilling, which is...
Or John, a 77-year-old, 260-pound man could have had a lot to do with it, too. Huh?
Indeed, a man who was also relentless in his energy, who just was also, to come back to something you were saying, that, you know, this it is important that we're seeing these major figures all dying together for another reason. It's just showing that the season of one generation holding power is relinquishing to a new generation. And whenever this happens, every 20 years or so, but specifically in every 80 years, there's a big change. We're entering that with this year. So in a way, it is significant in the natural span of lifetime, in the natural span of generations holding power. their efforts to do it, and their view of the world dies with them and is replaced by new generations who perhaps have new ideas about what to do, or also are inexperienced in what to do, and that's why there's learning by trial and error for the next 20 years.
You know, I realized after living through the Kennedy assassination, you as well, I'm sure, that life goes on, John. And no matter who passes on, whether they're great leaders or not, life just continues to move on, and leaders are replaced by leaders, and people are replaced by people, and that's just the way it is.
Just like leaves in a tree, the seasons of history see us bloom and then fall and then replace with new tree leaves. A lot of cycles in nature are very much like the cycles of human history.
I like that analogy. Let's take a few calls while we continue to chat here, John, and we've got to get you back for a full show again. East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us, and John Hogue. Hi there.
Hi, George. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Good. I'm Steve from Northwest Ohio. I had a question about black-robed individuals that John was speaking of earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It may not coincide, but I've heard in some, like, prophecy type of, not readings, but whatever, about Jesuits, you know, being black robe, and of a black pope, and whether or not maybe that was actually a black-skinned person who happened to be a Jesuit, you know, anything in relation with the pope changing, you know, the Pope John Paul dying and so forth. Can you touch on that at all?
Well, yeah, there's some interesting things with Benedict the 16th. He has in his coat of arms the Moor's head, which is the symbol of a black prince. It's Othello, basically, and it was very popular amongst heraldry during the Renaissance period. And his family, a Germanic family, adopted, for whatever reasons, this head. So that's kind of a loose allusion to it in his coat of arms. It is true that a black pope had been expected, and indeed a lot of people predicted, including I predicted in my book, The Last Pope, that the greatest chance of that would be happening would be Cardinal Martini. Would be the closest choice, but I also said in the book that I felt, because of the conservative direction the papacy has taken, that he had the best chance, but probably someone more conservative would be chosen. But you see, Martini is a Jesuit. It's also a law against, there's kind of an unwritten law in the papacy that a Jesuit can never be a pope. Then again, we've had over 400 years plus before we had a Polish pope or a non-Italian, so things are changing. So that's the one thing. And the thing, though, that is related to Nostradamus' prophecies about Mesopotamia, modern-day Iraq, I mean, just if I read these quickly, you can see there's a certain line of metaphor prophetically that he's going for when he says the great host and sect of the cross of the Crusaders will be amassed in Mesopotamia, Iraq, of the nearby river, the Fast Company, probably the Blitzkrieg up the Euphrates, that such law will hold for the enemy. Now, the important thing is, who's the enemy in this? Is it us, meaning that we lose in Iraq, or is it the others?
Doesn't it speak in Revelations about whoever is talking about moving through that area quickly, and then we'll be visited quickly or something like that?
Well,
there's
the great 200 million horsemen that are supposed to come from the east, which is probably metaphorical for something else. The key about that in a real-world analogy is that the Euphrates must dry up before this happens. And we've got to, in the coming decades, with global warming and the dwindling of headwaters of the Tigris and Euphrates, the need of Turkey to draw most of the water in the future could very well see by the 2020s the Euphrates drying up. And when you add to that exploding birth rate in the region, dwindling food sustainability, unstable political situation, a whole world that needs and will do anything they have to do if they have to control the oil from that region, the friction between Arab and Israeli, Arab, Israeli, and Persian, Iranians, and then you've really got a real-world confluence of apocalyptic potentials from now to the 2020s in the Middle East.
Two different views here. A Palestinian leader in Damascus and Syria said with regards to Sharon's stroke and hemorrhaging now. We say frankly that God is great and is able to extract revenge on this butcher. We thank God for this gift. And then a Palestinian commentator on the Saudi-owned Al Arabiya network said that Sharon offered him praise, saying that he's the first Israeli leader who stopped claiming Israel had the right to all of the Palestinians' land. So two different views on different sides of the spectrum, John Hogue.
Yes, and I'm sure the views are also being shared, as I said earlier, between moderate and radical Israelis who are thinking that Sharon made a mistake and is being punished for giving up any land, and others are thinking probably, what a pity that just when we were beginning, when it's almost like what happened when Nixon, of all people, the great anti-communist Richard M. Nixon, decided to go to China in his trilateral diplomacy.
That.
He used to say, he said, anybody else doing this, Mao and the others and the Chinese wouldn't believe. But he said, as he did in third person, but Nixon doing this, they're going to take this to heart. They're going to respect this. And in a way, I thought what Sharon did was as bold as what Nixon did in China. So it's almost a strange thing that's going on in the Middle East. It's like when Yitzhak Rabin had almost achieved peace and then he was assassinated. Sharon does something dramatic, and now he is crippled and perhaps going to die soon. It's almost as if, as Ecclesiastes says, there's a time for peace, but there's also a time for war, and perhaps 2006 is the time for war.
Next up, first-time caller line. It's your turn on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hey, Mom.
Hello. Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, this is Ralph from Alabama. I had a question for your guest.
Sure, Ross. Go ahead.
I was wondering if he thought is he familiar with the prophecy about the God's people coming home to Israel and that his land wouldn't be thrown down ever again after that.
Oh yes. Well, there's a number of. It starts in the Old Testament in Daniel. Ezekiel, and then it is augmented in the New Testament in Book of Revelation and also in the small apocalypses of Matthew and the other testaments. It's an ongoing theme. It's interesting that all the religions that have branched out from Judaism, Islam, Christianity, all have very similar apocalyptic views of how this final battle between good and evil goes, and the only difference is at the end game they all kind of see, well, if the Christians' version wins, then everybody will be converted to Christianity, the Jews will come home. If it's the Islamic version, it's the Jews will be converted into Islam and Jerusalem will be come home. And so on it goes, and the Israeli Messiah version of it is Israel becomes the center of the world, does homage to the Israelis and the Jews in Jerusalem. So here we are, everybody seeing this, the same apocalypse, but they seeing a very, self-centered version of how it will end. So I have been all over the world, and when the book Messiahs, which I wrote about these sort of things, about apocalyptic traditions, it is amazing to go all over the world and see how every person, whether he's a Vedic Brahmin or a Buddhist, they all have their apocalyptic prophecies for how the world's going to be in a golden age. And they all give you great persuasive arguments to how theirs is the right way and all the others are wrong. So it says to me, probably the interpretation of the end game is wrong in everyone's religious perception. But what is right is something messianic is coming. What it is, we will have to let events and our own intelligence decide when it happens.
And let them unfold. West of the Rockies, welcome to the show. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, sir.
Hello, George.
Yes, sir.
Hello, George. Hello, John. My name is Richard. I'm calling from Riverside, California.
Okay, Richard.
Yes,
go ahead.
It's an honor to talk to you, George. I appreciate what you do, and I'd just like to thank you real quick for that.
Okay.
I wanted to throw something out there since we're on the topic of the end days and the apocalyptic time with Sharon, because right now he suffered this major head wound, and I've listened and I've heard many different people speech and talk about the apocalyptic times They said that one of the antichrists is supposed to have a major head wound and miraculously recover. And if Sharon can qualify for that, you know, as a candidate, if he miraculously recovers and he becomes a changed man, and next thing you know, he brings peace to Israel, that I think, you know, he may be a good candidate, so the end times may be near.
Well,
Richard brings up an interesting subject here, John.
Yes, he does. I mean, and fortunately, it's one that if that indeed happens, it's something that's so rare in prophecy, an objective proof. And if indeed Ariel Sharon were to recover, that would mean he should be watched as far as that goes. Also, although it may very well be that people do sometimes recover from these things, although this is a real long shot that he would recover and be fully recovered and changed man. The other thing to understand, too, is that back 2,000 years ago, there was a common legend that Nero was also severely wounded in the head and rose from the dead.
Mm-hmm.
And one has to understand that St. John, when he used the term 666, when you decode that into the equivalent of Hebrew letters that count up to 666, there are two versions of it. The earliest versions of the book of Revelation has it as 666, and another edition in a later century has it as 616. What's intriguing to me about both of them is they both spell out the numerical equivalents to Nero Kaiser and Caligula Kaiser. That means Nero Caesar and Caligula Caesar. Now, Caligula blasphemed the Holy Temple in Jerusalem by putting his statue in it, in the sacred ground. So that would always make him an anti-Jewish, anti-Christ figure. Nero was a contemporary of St. John the Divine, who wrote the book of Revelation. And there's a lot of things pointing to it actually being a prophecy about Nero, not about our times.
That's pretty dramatic stuff, John.
So a wound in the head might have been meant for someone 2,000 years ago, not for Ariel Sharon.
With this end times prophecy and the events that you see as a prophecy expert, and again, you've offered your own interpretation. Can you say, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that this event here with Sharon is a very major event with regards to end times and end time prophecy?
Well, it is, and the focus is, what does end times mean? It means different things to different religions and different prophetic traditions. It often means, in certain traditions, that it's the end of the world as we know it, and that is certainly coming in the next 20, 30 years, because we're facing challenges as a race of beings on this planet that have never been seen before on a global scale. So a reckoning is coming. Whether that reckoning is the sum total of stupid robotic actions that now requires to wake up and break our habits and be truly intelligent human beings, or whether it is a preordained time that the critical mass of sin has come and it's time for the judgment of the world, is going to play out in the next 20, 30 years. I do believe that, and things like what is going on with Ariel Sharon's severe illness are significant historical events, at the very least, if not apocalyptic precursors to the times that are changing that we're going into.
Well, every hour that ticks by will be a very important hour with regards to his health and condition. John, we will stay in touch with you, and I have a feeling we, like as we did when the Pope died, we may be summoning you back on Coast to Coast, my friend.
Well, I'd be happy to do my best to interpret the signs.
You got them. John Hoag, hoagprophecy.com. There's a link at coasttocoastam.com. Do take a moment and go up there and look at some of the work that he has done. We'll be back in a moment. Richard C. Hoagland joins us for the first hour, and also a very special guest, Keith Morgan, as we talk about some incredible stories on Coast to Coast AM.